This is the Actual Fluency Podcast, helping you become a better language learner by providing motivating weekly inspiration, as well as top tips and tricks from expert guests. And now, your host, Chris Broholm.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Actual Fluency Podcast, Season 3, Episode 12. And today I'm talking to Alex Rawlings, and Alex was a guest back in Season 1. And a lot has happened since. It's been almost 2 years. And although he did make a slight cameo appearance in a Polyglot Conference episode, I felt like it was time to take a talk with Alex again. And this time we get into a very interesting topic that's been on my mind lately, if you've been following the blog, and that is to where to live in the world if you're a sort of a freelancer or you're an online teacher or whatever you might be doing where you don't have to take into an office. And we get into a lot of discussion about what are the good places depending on weather, prices. And then the discussion sort of changes into what I like to call the expat problem. I don't know if that's the official term, but basically we discuss what happens when expats with foreign income, which is much higher than local income, move into a city like Berlin, Budapest. Other cities around Europe are facing the same problems where the prices go up, and they go up so much that the locals can't afford living in the city anymore. They have to move out. And we kind of talk back and forth about that and give our opinions. So I hope you enjoy this talk with Alex Rawlings. And just one little quick shout out. I know some of you have given some feedback that you don't enjoy these sort of long introductions in the beginning. So I'm trying to do just a minute or two just to, you know, say hi, what's up, you know, so it's not just the recording that you're going to listen to, but you're also actually listening to my voice recorded pretty much live with the episode. So the only other point was I finally put the show on Patreon for people who have been asking of ways to support the show. So if you're a fan of the show out there, you can now get extra stuff, extra bonus stuff, and in exchange for supporting the show financially with whatever amount you feel it's worth to you. And that's the beauty of Patreon. It's kind of like being a patron in the old days, you know, where an opera or a theater would have nobility as sort of patrons of the theater, so they supported the arts. And while I wouldn't call this podcast art, I certainly hope that some of you get some value out of it, enough to where you might consider supporting it. So I just want to say thank you if you're doing that, and you can find it on actualfluency.com/support. And now time for the episode. It's time for another Actual Fluency Podcast, and on the show today I'm joined by fan favorite Alex Rawlings, the most multilingual student of Britain in year 2012. How many years do you think we can use that, Alex? Welcome to the show.
100 years, it will still be used.
On your tombstone it will say most multilingual student of Britain. It's actually funny how
12.
Right. It's so funny how often you're introduced like that, even in, you know, now 2015 2016. But what can you do? Is a great honor, I suppose. So
well, you'd be amazed how many people think I'm still a student. Like, they're like, you're 20, right? And I'm like, no. Time moves on and I move with it, unfortunately, but thank you very much for the compliment. I mean,
oh yeah. Fantastic. So you're in Spain right now. You left Budapest and Hungary. You left me behind. Thank you. And so how's life in Spain?
Life in Spain is good. what can I say? It's nice weather. The cost of living is pretty good. There's a lot of things that I like about it. With every place, as you know yourself, now that you've started to live abroad, there is a long period, I think, before you really start to settle and feel like it's home. So, you know, gradually warming up to things.
Nice. So how long do you think that period was for you for Budapest?
God, you know, I think it just creeps up on you. You feel kind of very alienated for a very long time. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, hang on a minute. I just did all this stuff and it feels totally normal. What was really weird is that, so I moved to Budapest in July 2014. And in August 2015, I had this really overwhelming feeling of familiarity. And it was something that I wasn't expecting at all, but I kind of felt like, I remember what this was like. I remember what this was like last year. And all of a sudden I had something to compare it to. Like, I could see the cycle starting again, whereas before I was kind of thinking like, oh, I wonder what next month will be like. I wonder how the weather will be and that kind of thing. So I think possibly after a whole year, you get that feeling of, you know, really being settled and being at home. It's just a year's a pretty long time to wait when you're a bit impatient for it.
It is definitely. I'm about 6 months in now, and we just started winter, which was a bit of a surprise.
I warned you about winter in Budapest, Chris.
No, you didn't. You said winter is miserable and everyone is depressed. And I said, okay, well, that sounds like every northern country, you know, that happens. And then when I came home from a nice week-long vacation in December, it was minus 15 when I came back. My flat was so cold, it was harder to go outside.
Yeah, well, I mean, I forgot that you'd never been to Eastern Europe before. And when I say miserable and depressed, that's what I mean. Last year, it didn't last for long, that cold weather. It was a couple of weeks, and then it went back to being nondescript. But, yeah.
So thanks for not mentioning the incredible cold. When I remember my real estate guy, he said when I moved in here, he was like, yeah, the flat is nice. It's going to get a little cold in winter, but otherwise it's fine. And I was like, yeah, that sounds fine. You know, I didn't think of it. And then now it's winter and it's working hard to keep it hot.
Well, yeah. I mean, the winter is not a lot of fun in Budapest, that's all I can say. There's things to do. I think this is the key. You have to distract yourself, and that's what Hungarians do. They, you know, they book loads of tickets to concerts. They leave. They just fill their time with other stuff. I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, the cold doesn't bother me that much. I'm not an enormous fan of it, but what really gets to me is darkness, like especially short.
Yeah.
That was something that I found very difficult about living in Budapest and something that I wasn't prepared for at all, the fact that the sun sets at 4:15, exactly the same as it does in England,
right?
In December. And that was a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I'm totally feeling the same. I guess people also cope with like going to the bar and just having some palinka or just drinking.
Alcohol, of course. Alcohol is always the solution to these problems.
It really is. It really is. I was out in minus 12 or something the other night, and after two beers, it felt fine.
Yeah.
So you'll
see that, because the one really nice thing about Hungarian winter is the Hungarian spring, and that suddenly comes with all its euphoria and it goes back to being that amazing place that you really liked when you came to the Polyglot workshops in. So don't worry, you'll stay in there, and I guess by late March, April, it will already be warming up again.
That's fantastic. I guess in a way, I don't know if we talked about this, but I guess that it's a nice feeling to, I mean, you appreciate the nice things more when you experience bad things, right? So it seems like the spring and summer and autumn are more appreciated because the winter is so tough.
Yeah, I guess an optimist would see it that way. I'm not sure that I'm 100% an optimistic person, so that took a while for me to process. But yeah, no, you're right. The other thing I think about the seasons is I remember when I went to Singapore, where they don't really have seasons. Like, the temperature variation is 2 degrees in the whole year, like 32 to 34.
Sign me up.
Well, this is the thing. So, I mean, it's quite an unpleasant climate to be in. But what really struck me is, because I was living in Budapest at the time, where you have these insane seasonal shifts, is the people that I met there said, God, you know, I've been in Singapore now for 9-10 years, and the time has gone by so quickly because there's been absolutely nothing to measure my year by. There's been no winter, there's been no spring, nothing. It's just every day it's hot, every day it's raining, and, you know, I don't know where the time has gone. And that kind of made me think, like, whoa, maybe the seasons do have a point. Maybe the seasons are something that are there for us to kind of measure our time with. And, you know, since I've moved to Spain, this part of Spain in particular, Valencia, where I am, does not have particularly pronounced seasons. It's still pretty warm outside. It's like 18, 19 degrees. And I've started to notice this feeling as well, that time is going by very, very quickly.
Right. But what do you prefer? I mean, obviously, minus 15 and plus 45 is probably a bit extreme, but I mean, is there a perfect country where they do have seasons, but it's not that extreme?
I don't know. I don't think there is a perfect country. I think that's part of this world that we live in. There's nowhere where you're going to live which is perfect. Or at least if you do find that place, it's not going to be because of the place itself. It's going to be because of the people you know and the life you have there. I don't know. I always want a bit of everything.
Live in different in multiple places, have a summer home
No, I mean that's an obvious solution, but the problem with that is it's just the upheaval, and also
double rent.
sorry.
Also double
Yeah,
rent.
exactly. Or quadruple rent if you're moving every season. I mean,
Yeah.
you can't pay for that kind of thing. I don't
Well,
know. I
you
mean,
can rent it
I
out. I don't know. Rent it
rent.
out.
Yeah, but do you really feel settled in a place like where someone else is staying? There's a lot of things to
Right.
think about, I think. And I think the biggest thing is that when you're abroad, and especially if you're abroad for the first time, you notice a lot of these things that probably are just as bad in your home country. But because you're not suddenly surrounded by lots of people that you know and family and things to do and kind of a very familiar life, you notice them much more intensely than you would at home. So, for example, Chris, you're not going to tell me that the winter in Denmark is great, right?
No, but it's better than this, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Which is surprising to many people, actually. But Denmark is a very mild country. Like, we rarely have negative degrees, even during winter. And snow, of course, you got a lot of rain, but it's the same with England, right? So it's not
Yeah.
that bad. But yeah, it's not great either.
But I
Everyone's
mean, but
depressed
if I
and.
think back to when I was living in England, like I never liked the winter either, but it was never kind of at the forefront of my mind in the same way that it was when I was living in Budapest. And I think it's just because I didn't have as much to think about.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really too bothered by it. I was just surprised that it was this cold.
Yeah.
But it doesn't bother me, you know. I just layer up and get some long johns or whatever and you know, get going. I do stay inside more obviously, and we don't go to cafes every day like we did in summer. And yeah, so all those things are affected, of course, and shorter days like you say, but apart from that, you know, it's okay. As long as the heating can keep up and doesn't break, then it's okay. So,
You know, I don't even have heating in this place in Spain. We don't need it.
air conditioning, probably.
Yeah, we have that, but no heating. So we're like, no one
Oh,
has heating here.
God. It's the opposite here. It's like nobody has air conditioning
Yeah, no,
because,
that's a
you know,
serious problem. This is
35
a problem.
degrees, you know, nothing,
I
properly.
met some really interesting people when I was living in Hungary, and I think that was what made that whole time very, very special for me. But I met this taxi driver, the Uber driver, who had been to almost every single country in the world, which was really bizarre. I was like, oh, which is your favorite country? And he said, not Hungary. I was like, why? Why not Hungary? And he's like, ugh, the people are never happy here. You know, all winter they're like, oh, I'm cold, I'm cold, I'm cold. All summer they're like, oh, I'm hot, I'm hot, I'm hot. You can just never get them to just
That's
enjoy
true,
what they have. And I guess, you know, something about that rang true with me when I think about what it was like to be in Budapest for that year.
yeah. I guess you're right because it's just so hot. I remember the summer, which also surprised me. You remember at the workshop, I was like, ah, it's Eastern Europe. It's probably cold. And it was like 30, 40 degrees every day. And I was like in sweaters and stuff. I was like, what is this? I'm not used to this kind of weather. So it was really painful on several levels, but yeah, that's the thing with weather. It's so hard to find a place that has mild winters and mild summers. It just doesn't happen. Like where you are, presumably at summer, it gets crazy hot.
No, like we kind of have
No.
mild winters and mild summers here, but the point is that you have very high humidity here as well. So even
Oh,
though
right.
the temperature seems quite low, you actually feel it much more than you would in Hungary, for example.
Oh, okay. And you know, you've been traveling or living in different places for a few years now. Do you think you'll settle in a place, or do you think that you'll just keep going from place to place every now and again?
It's a good question. Every time I move to a new place, I go to it with the attitude of, right, this is it now. This is going to be me for a very long time. And I think it's important to do that because otherwise you don't fully settle in, you don't fully adjust, and that kind of thing. For now, though, when push comes to shove, I kind of feel like I think there's a lot more of the world still to see. And, you know, we are part of this very exciting new movement, let's call it, of people that are able to work online and choose where they live. And I kind of feel like because I have that opportunity, it would be a real disservice to not take it and to not explore more places and live in more places in the world. So I don't know at the moment. I could imagine spending more than a year where I am now, but there are also other places that I'd like to see too.
Cool, and I totally agree that the world is open, but it's also a big hassle to move, I find. So, I don't know because the problem is you can't live in a place and then just take a month or two somewhere, or even 3 months somewhere for the tourist visa. You don't really get enough of a picture of what the country or the culture is really like in 3 months, do you?
Not at all. No, you need to do the full cycle.
Yeah.
I think you need to see the country go through all those motions. Because, I mean, look, if you went to Budapest in July and stayed for 3 months, you'd think Budapest was like the Middle East.
Right, yeah, it's true.
You'd leave completely the wrong impression about what the country's like.
You'd Everyone's know, happy. And
people are so relaxed. And
it's like, great country. And...
Yeah, and then bang, the winter comes, and you think that Budapest is like Siberia. I mean, the truth is somewhere in between, you know, but it does take these perspectives to really see that. And it, I think it, even a year in the scheme of things is not actually that much time, you know. Right. I mean, there's still things that I think I wasn't finding out about Budapest till right until the end. And there were certain experiences that I didn't have until maybe the last few days that kind of filled in gaps for me about the whole city.
Right. So you think 1 year was perhaps not enough at the end of the day?
Well, I mean, I don't know how much enough would be. There's always stuff to find out, and places change as well, and you have to keep up with them. But I think a year is a good amount of time if you're not settled on staying in one place and you want to really see it. I think a year is a good thing. You then run into all these problems with kind of registering and deregistering for taxation and bank accounts and that kind of thing. That is a headache.
Yeah, and moving 30 kilos of books or something.
250 kilos, but
250 kilos. I haven't grown my collection that much.
Yeah. Well, no, that is also a hassle. But depends what you want, you know. I mean, the world's a big place.
Yeah, I think right now my plan, just to contrast that a little bit, was probably to set up a base here, because I think that it's in the middle of Europe and I don't like to deal with all those taxes and moving everything every year and doing all that stuff. So I was thinking about just setting up a base, and then if I want to take a month or two traveling, I can do that. I mean, it's up to me. It is a weakness because you don't get the full experience, and the language, you're not going to learn much in 2 months, if anything. So it's like you're stuck between these two situations, right? That doesn't seem to be an easy way until they figure out something like e-citizenships or something.
Which you mean with a taxation system and that kind of thing?
Yeah, like if it was just centralized, or just allow people to be registered somewhere in Europe and just not live there. I don't know any country that has that. You know, you need to have a physical presence in some country.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's reasons why that happens. I think the point is that these kinds of laws haven't really caught up with the kinds of work and the kind of lifestyles that people like you and I are doing right now. But the good news is that we're growing as a group of people. So hopefully, as more and more people become self-employed and more people start working through the internet, things will come along that will cater for us.
Yeah. Yeah, or otherwise we just have to move and deal with the hassle every time. But then 1 year does seem a little bit... not enough time, because you have to deal with all the bureaucracy for just 1 year. You know, you'd want to maximize that pain and maybe do 18 months or something at least.
Well, this is the argument, ironically, for maybe just doing shorter stints, because if you just do 3 months in each place, or even less than 6 months, actually, I'm pretty sure, I'm not a legal advisor, so don't take this advice for, you know, literally, but I believe that if you're less than 6 months in a place, then you are not considered to be a fiscal resident.
Right.
So in that case, you can retain your tax liability in your home country.
Yeah, I know for Denmark, it's something like that. If you're outside Denmark more than 6 months a year, you're not considered taxable in Denmark anymore.
Mm.
So the opposite must also be true. If you are in Denmark 6 months of the year, then you'll be fine. I don't know why you'd be registered in Denmark, though. They have crazy taxes. So be registered somewhere else. But then, of course, you get the tourist visa limitation. It's only 3 months. So unless you're traveling around Europe as a European, then, and I know we have a lot of American visitors who probably be hit hard by tourist visas. But anyway, 3 months will probably be your limitation most of the time.
So, Chris, I wanted to ask you a question, because I know you ask a lot of questions on this show, but I wanted to
turn the spotlight
on you a little bit. So when I was living in Budapest, I'd get this question again and again and again, and it became increasingly difficult to answer. And it was basically, why did you come here? Why did you come to our country to live?
Right. Well, the fun answer I always give, because I also get asked this all the time, the fun answer I always give is like, I was on my way to Berlin, and I had a heavy suitcase that had to get on the plane, and I didn't want to do that, So I just stayed. And that was kind of the, and it always leads to the follow-up story. It's pretty funny. But I did actually have a ticket for Berlin. I was going to go to Berlin to live. And then I saw Budapest and I was like, if I can have all this where I am now, why do I want to travel to a new country to know what I'm getting? You know, this was like the adventure. So for me, I didn't know much about Hungary before I came to your workshop.
You didn't know anything about the climate?
No, not really. I had looked at Budapest and Prague and Berlin as possible expat locations because it was very popular. But I discounted both Hungary and the Czech Republic because of the languages, ironically, because I thought that I was not in a place of my life where I could learn yet another complicated language. And I never knew anything about Hungary. I never knew anything about the Czech Republic. So I didn't have any sort of things attracting me to either language. So I just said, okay, well, Berlin, I can improve my German. I know some people who live there. It's a nice city most of the time. And it's got, you know, a very nice sort of expat community, startup community, co-working community, whatever. You can find anything in Berlin, I'm sure. But yeah, then I was just here and I was like, wow, this is like an adventure. You know, walking down the street, you don't understand anything. Literally have no idea if that's a brothel or a hairdresser. Which is, you know, when you make that mistake, it becomes obvious. But
which are the boys' toilets? Which are the girls' toilets? So it's also, you know, there's not a lot to go on.
It shook me up because then I realized I'd never traveled to a non-English speaking country. Like, yeah, I was in Germany. They all speak English. I was in like Turkey in the tourist areas. They all speak English, and I don't speak any Turkish anyway. And it was just like, I realized that I'd never fully been in a completely foreign environment that where I was like completely screwed, actually. I was just, you know, I couldn't do anything. I had so many problems in the first week or two and nobody spoke English, it seemed. And of course, now that I understand basic Hungarian and could probably do some transactions and stuff, now, of course, everyone I meet speaks English for some reason. But back when I came here, it's like, my the guy who is like basically the janitor of my building, he didn't speak a word of English, trying to ask me questions and stuff. And my another guy came to fix some lighting in the flat, ironically not very well, but they just didn't speak a word. And I was really surprised by this because I thought all of Europe spoke English, right?
Yeah. But does that kind of, do you still see that as the adventure? Is that still what draws you to being there? Or have you started to see that a bit more as an inconvenience? Because that was my experience as well. And when I'd say it to people, there would be this split in reaction. Some people would be like, wow, that's so exciting. Other people would be like, oh my God, I could never live in a place like that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened, like you described. When I came here, it was the adventure. And then a few months in, it was just becoming convenient. And I realized that Hungary is extremely convenient for people who work online. First of all, they are in the middle of Europe. They have excellent connectivity. You know, the airport is really well connected to at least most of Europe, and they have really cheap flights. But also, actually, you can take a train to most major capitals, as you've probably done. It's just a very well-connected place to be in general. And it's not too far away from Denmark, where I'm from, so I go back a lot. It's not too far away from England. I go there all the time as well. And so it became a place of convenience and really good income tax deals as well. They have 16% income tax as a base rate, flat rate too. It doesn't go up with income. And you can join the Social Security for essentially £15 a month. So, you know, for me, it's just a really good country for expats. And I know a lot of people say that the Hungarian people are sort of cold and you know, they can be miserable and depressed and angry and stuff, but they're also incredibly nice people, I think, most of the time. And they remind me a bit of the Danish people. You know, if you don't know them, they might seem like really rude in a way, but once you get to know them and understand how they think, They're you know, just like the rest of us, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think one person said to me, you know, like once you break through and kind of become friends with a Hungarian, that person's your friend for life. And that's been my experience, certainly since leaving Hungary. I'm still very much in contact with my friends, and I kind of wish I was a little bit closer so I could come back and visit. But, you know, from going from the center of Europe to being a little bit out on a limb here has meant that traveling is not as easy as it once was.
Right. Well, you should live closer to a better airport, I suppose. I don't know about the Valencian airport. It seems a little bit small.
No,
There
yeah,
is
it's a
one.
small airport. It's a small airport. The problem within Spain is that, from my point of view, Madrid and Barcelona are prohibitively expensive cities to live in. There's no point in me living in a city like that. I may as well go back to London in terms of rental prices. So yeah, there's a lot of things to balance out.
Yeah, we haven't covered that actually, prices as well. That was something that also drew me to come here because, well, not come here, but stay here actually, because it's incredible how much you get for your money here. And a lot of people are a little bit, oh, so you're just there to, get cheap beers and live the cheap life, which you can do here. But I saw it as an opportunity to basically do more things. Like in Denmark, if I had to go out for a cafe just for lunch, we're talking like £20. It's London prices basically. And down here, I can eat lunch, at a nice family restaurant, for a few pounds at the most. So for me, someone who isn't earning, millions of pounds, it's it's a very nice place to be in. And but obviously that creates problems too. We talked about that before, how if you make English money in Hungary and people here make like a few hundred pounds a month, then there's a it's tough to socialize sometimes. It's very awkward.
It's tough to socialize, but there's also kind of bigger issues going on in Hungary right now as a result of people like you and I going there. So rent prices, since when I moved into my flat in Hungary, have gone up 75% in Budapest. I mean, that's enormous. I remember getting a flat in Budapest was the easiest thing in the world when I went there, and I was thinking like, oh, thank God, I'm not in Berlin or somewhere where I have to look for 6 months and then give them the whole year's rent in advance because I don't believe I'm going to pay it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we've now reached that point in Budapest as well. And I mean, what you used to be able to get in Hungary for maybe 300-400 euros a month is now more like 900, 1,000 even in some cases. So it's very difficult, and I know this is going to have an enormous strain on Hungarian society, as it has done in Berlin and everywhere where the tech hipsters go,
Yeah,
basically.
it's true. It's true. I think what will happen, and I think this already happened to a large extent, is that the center will be dominated by expats and Airbnb, and then
Yeah,
the
that's the
Hungarian.
Airbnb is enormous thing to the tourism as
Yeah, and
well.
it's some. It's a quite annoying actually in a way, but it's driving the Hungarian working people out of the center. They're living in the suburban areas now, or
And it's
even in
pushing the
other
prices
cities.
up. Because, I mean, you're talking in pounds. You're saying, oh, I can do this for a few pounds or blah, blah, blah. That's fine. But if we start converting Hungarian prices into euros, it's actually not as cheap as it first seems compared to what you'd be able to get in the rest of Europe. And that's a trend which I see, continuing from the time that I was in there. And suddenly now, of course, it's even more expensive. You used to be able to eat the standard in a restaurant in Hungary. A main meal was 5 euros, 1,500 forint. That was kind of standard, even a nice meal. Now you're looking 2,500-3,000 forint, which is already 10 euros. And where's the cheap Hungary now? I mean, 10 euros is not cheap by any means for a meal in a restaurant.
Definitely have to look for it now. I feel like just that's just my experience. You have your little kind of Fritzi Papa mom and pop restaurants around the corner that still do that deal, but then most of the cafes and restaurants have kind of adapted to tourism and they increased all their prices. So a main course is like 2,500 now on average. And I think if you try to avoid those and go to the right places, you can still do it really cheaply. So the argument still stands, but it is a concerning evolution. I don't really have any idea of like what will happen. I mean, it seems like the prices are just going to continue going up. I guess investing in a flat right now would be nice, but what I've heard from
So,
Hungarians though is they have a nice family tradition of like passing on flats throughout down the family, so they don't have to pay for rent actually, many of them. That's what I understand. So that's a slight save that they have this tradition where each family just has several flats. But for those who don't, it's tough. How can you live on
definitely.
400 euros a month or 600 maybe?
So, do you think that there's a sustainable way to move to a country like Hungary?
sustainable for who, you know?
Sustainable for the local environment.
Right.
We come in with our pounds and euros, whatever. We can buy more than the local people. We price the local people out, and you get Berlin, because that's exactly what happened there.
Yeah.
How do you think, you know, because I'm wondering if people are listening or watching who are thinking, you know what, I want to move to a place like Budapest and start my life, but they're concerned about the issues that we've been talking about. What do you think people like us could do to encourage more sustainable living in places like Budapest?
Well, I think the first is not to support tourist traps, all the various tourist traps. So something like, you know, when you see flats posted, don't just jump at it because it sounds cheap in your London prices. You know, I live in a flat now that's probably 100 euros overpriced. But so
you're talking from experience here.
Yeah, definitely. Because I was just so desperate. And, you know, people who read the blog about my experience moving to Hungary and staying in Airbnb for like a month and a half will know that it was not because I had great choice. I just had to do something, because otherwise I wouldn't have enough money to cover the deposit, because Airbnb was significantly more expensive. Mm. And then it's a decent flat. You know, it's not terrible. It's huge, and it's not the most practical, and nothing in it works, but it's about, I would say, 100, 150 euros overpriced. And if everybody was as stupid as I was when they come here and they buy the overpriced flat, then obviously the prices are going to go up. But if people took a second to actually evaluate the prices with the market and see, okay, that looks a little bit high, then at some point the realtors are just going to have to drop it down a little bit. But it's supply and demand, isn't it? If there's like a million Danish people coming here because I posted about it, then obviously the price is going to go up, because there are not enough flats to support all these new people, you know? So
yeah,
I can't.
Do you think it's because I'm wondering, do you think it's like ethically or morally questionable for people like us who come from rich countries in Europe to move to poorer countries like Hungary?
These are
questions that I did find myself asking myself when I was in Hungary, because I was like, you know, I mean, especially when you're there for a long time and you get to know the people, you see the people really do have a lot of problems there. And in some ways I'm solving it, you know, I'm creating more work, I'm visiting places, I'm feeding money into the economy. But in other ways, I'm creating more problems, because people are seeing me as a more valuable consumer than the local person. Mm. And they're putting a price at what to me still seems cheap, but what completely excludes a local person.
Yeah, I totally agree with that observation. And like I said, it's a great question, and it's a really difficult one, because you have your own interest to protect as well. You know, if there's nothing with all the Schengen and stuff, there's nothing preventing you from doing it. And there's nothing, you know, just to even discourage people from doing it. And I would just hope that by me moving here, obviously one person doesn't change much, but if every expat who moved here, I mean, they will spend more money on average everywhere. I mean, they will keep the local economy running. Maybe the expats or the tourists are the reason that Fritzipapa is still open. You know, a lot of Hungarians go there, but it's kind of a tourist site now with such a terrible service. It's like, so people
this
go
is
there.
This cheap place I introduced you around the corner from your flat where you can eat for €1.50.
Yeah, and three courses lunch meal with a drink is like €3. So
yeah,
it's really great. But the point is just that I hope, I don't understand macroeconomics in any way, but I hope that the fact that people discover Hungary will mean that there are more investments made, there are more companies getting more business abroad, there are more, you know, because it also helps local Hungarian business that expats come here, because they can be hired as, you know, advisors and stuff like that. So they will start new business opportunities, start new trade opportunities, and in general, just spend more money. And I hope also tax, you know, that's just a basic thing. But I mean, 16% tax doesn't sound like much, but if you make English pounds, then 16 is a lot of money at the end of the day. You know, you're probably paying more tax than most people get in salaries. So you're helping the economy, but the question is, by everyone coming here, is that help enough, or will it just drive everyone out? And then you just have to also consider, is that such a bad thing? Because it's happened everywhere else, right? So
yeah. And one of the things that I kind of had this strong sense of when I was living in Hungary was that we're swapping places. Because I mean, I know you have a lot of listeners who are in the UK, right? But in the UK, when I was growing up, the talk all of the time was about Polish people coming to the UK, Polish and Hungarians and Slovakians and everything, but especially yeah. Polish people, you know, and we're like, all these Polish people coming here, it's taking jobs away from local people. It's the same argument, you know, but just the other way around and for the other reasons. So with people like us and, you know, Budapest, there's a lot of people from Western Europe living there now. Yeah. There's a pretty big expat community of people who moved for the reasons that we did. But we're taking their place and they're taking our place, and somehow the effect is kind of the same, that local people are kind of losing out. So I don't know how far this argument goes.
It's really funny. It's funny you should say that, because I talked to some Hungarians about it, and apparently London is the second biggest Hungarian city in the world.
It is. I mean, my downstairs neighbor in where I live in London was from Hungary, and yeah. So when I would go home, the first thing I would hear was like him on a phone in like the street talking in Hungarian. It was like really, really weird. I'd like bump into people in boots, like in shops, just speaking Hungarian. I'd be like, "A bocsánat," and stuff like that. It's totally like weird. So it's kind of, but it's part of this really interesting thing which is happening, which is that as borders, well, and obviously with recent events excluded, but as borders are gradually being eroded across yeah. Europe, and people don't see moving to a country as a big deal anymore, you get this real mix. And I'm really interested to kind of see where in 15, 20 years this is going to lead us to, hopefully to a good place. But, you know, all over Europe now we've got this happening, and you know, I'm a part of it and you're a part of it, that people are moving and people are getting to know other cultures.
Yeah, I think my theory is the same as yours, that Budapest is going to be like Berlin and probably eventually London. They're all on this trajectory. And you're just going to move further and further away from the center to afford the rent. But the point is that Budapest wasn't really discovered, like proven by my complete ignorance of the city's viability. That's a nice sentence. You should put that somewhere. But yeah, I was just completely unaware of Hungary and Budapest in general. But now that I heard about it, I Googled a lot of expat forums and stuff, and people are really starting to discover it now. So that means that more and more people are coming. It's moving towards that Berlin situation. And we'll see where it goes. I mean, I just say, if I had 90,000 euros right now, 100,000 euros, I would buy a flat here in Budapest for sure. Maybe not even to live in.
Well, you'll have to have at least that again to pay all the taxes and stuff the Hungarian government would put on top of you. But yeah, I mean, I think, having 1,000 euros in your pocket is a very nice thing to do in Budapest.
Yeah, well, but I just think that it's a nice investment opportunity right now. And, you know, having the prices are just going to keep increasing, I think, like you suggested. Because it's gone up so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so another interesting thing that's happened, and I wanted to know what you think about this, because you've moved to a big city.
Yeah.
Right? And in the past, big cities were kind of a thing of convenience. It was like, we go live in the city because that's where the work opportunities are. But you're not in that category because you can work anywhere. And one thing that started to happen in Greece, which is a situation that I know about, of course, because it's my family being from there, is as the crisis has hit Greece and there's less and less work in Athens and people are moving online, people are just leaving the city in droves. People are going to smaller places where they can have better qualities of life, where they've got fresh air, cheaper rent, you know, they can drive cars, they can raise their kids, you know, without having to worry about crime and that kind of thing. And this is a new trend which is happening as a result of this whole online thing. And I was wondering whether you could ever see yourself living in a smaller place than Budapest.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. The feeling I have right now is that I'm still young and I still like, you know, going to cafes and getting a beer every now and again. I think when I'm a little bit older, maybe 5-10 years from now, that might be very appealing to move out of the city, because then I'd have stronger finances. I'd probably be able to afford a car, which I think is probably necessary when you move outside public transport. And as long as I'm close to an airport, or at least relatively conveniently placed in terms of an airport, then I don't really have to live in a city. My mom always criticizes me for, you know, wanting to live in a big city. She's like, "What do you use it for? What do you use it for?" And
there's something about it, because I mean, Valencia is a city. It's not a city. It's about 1 million people here if you count all of the surrounding areas, but it's a small city compared to what it was. And there are times when I kind of think, "Oh, you know, there's something." There's something different about here. It's missing some kind of atmosphere, which I was very aware of all the time in Budapest. So You know, I was wondering maybe we're addicted to the city, maybe we're addicted to the choice.
I don't know. I definitely feel more alive in the city. And I think one thing that you can't put a price on is like potential something. So the fact that I can, the fact that I have 200 restaurants or eating places within 10 minutes of walking doesn't mean that I actually visit them every year. But the potential of me having it is very much improving my life quality. Because it's like, yeah, I could go down and get a whatever. I could do that. I could do this. And you'll never ever miss anything. I've lived in small cities before. And it was just like in Denmark, one I lived in for many years had, I mean, probably less than 10,000. It was a town. And, you know, the main shop closed at like 7 at night. And you had to take a bus for like 45 minutes to get to the next major city to find a place that was open until 9. There was no eating options. There was no nothing. And that's, of course, an extreme example. You could live in somewhere like Valencia that's kind of in between. Or maybe
towards the big one. Between.
Yeah.
Somehow got
but let's just say 200,000, whatever, you know. I lived in a city like that, and that was very nice. But I think potential is a good word, because the fact that you have it will make it much easier for you. Like if here in Budapest, if something breaks or if I need something for my computer or something, you know, there's like several different media marts. There's like IKEA for furniture and stuff. So I know that everything is available. It doesn't mean that I take advantage of it every single day, but I can if I will. And I think that's worth something.
But then we move into very dangerous territory, because that's what people say about living in London.
Yes.
And London, I think we can all agree, is not how we want cities to end up. Because, I mean, I personally see myself, I mean, I wanted to live abroad. I always wanted to do that. I always wanted that experience. But it's not wholly my choice. I'm also living abroad because I cannot justify to myself the absolutely outrageous expense of living in London that I would have to take on. And when people used to come to visit me in Budapest, when people would come to meet in Valencia, they would pretty much say what you're saying right now, but about London. They'd be like, "Oh, this place is nice. Yeah, it's pretty. It's affordable, but it's not London. You know, you don't have the choice. You don't have the whole world at your fingertips." And what I found really interesting about that is because that wasn't my experience of living in London at all. You know, yes, I knew everything was there. I knew that, you know, a few clicks, a few tube stops, I could pretty much do anything in the entire world if I had the money. But the point was that the reality of living in London was that you don't do that much stuff.
No.
And most of your time on the tube, most of your time just doing normal things. And the people that visit the city who save up and make the time to do everything, they really enjoy it. But the actual people that live there, it's not always the case.
When I was thinking about permanent choices for habitation, I was thinking about like other UK cities, like going a little bit north maybe, just as an alternative, because there are cities a few hours away from London that are extremely nice and not as expensive. They'll probably be more expensive than Budapest, of course, but I was just thinking you could always go into London if you needed anything, but just live your normal life outside of it as you would. Because like you say, I eat out very seldomly, mostly because of it's too much sort of trouble to go out and break up your hours. And I always have like varying shifts all the time. So I just cook myself most of the time. So it's not that I need it and it's not that I use it at all. And so perhaps maybe that's the solution, you know, move out of the city and just go whenever you need anything. I don't know.
It's strange. It's just because I find this whole topic fascinating, because I think it's so unusual for us just to be able to choose where we want to live. It's this amazing thing. Previously, it's like, I'll go there because that's where the jobs are. You know?
Yeah.
I remember talking to my parents about this when I was growing up. And I said, I want to live in this country, or I want to live in that country, or I live in the other. And they said, okay, fine, but basically you go where you get work. And now everything's turned on its head. So I think it's just cool to be able to have this discussion and make these choices.
I guess the main attraction of capital cities is usually that they have great connectivity, like airports are extremely well connected.
If so it's easy to get out of them. That's the best thing about living in them.
That's another quote I would very much have to write down, because that's...
Because that was my experience in London.
But like, it's very true, isn't it? It's true. It's,
yeah.
It's true, but it's just... I mean, it's a luxury thing as well, isn't it? Because in Budapest, just as an example, when I fly anywhere, I fly with like the cheapest airline in the world, Wizz Air, And they have, except for extremely pretty stewardesses, they don't offer much in terms of service. Let's just put it that way. And, you know, but the airport is half an hour away by cab. And as you know, the cabs are very cheap, or you can Uber out there for not, for next to nothing. And, you know, I get into the airport, it's like, you know, fast track security is like, what is it, like £2 or something? It's really cheap anyway. And there's almost no queue anyway most of the time. And then you go to the free lounge sponsored by your MasterCard, just for having a MasterCard with your Hungarian bank. You know, all these things, it's just, it's true that it's for, it's advantageous when you're leaving the country, but it, it does, for me, it is a part of the whole argument at some point, because it, it connects me to the rest of the world. And I want to be a traveler, if nothing else, you know?
Yeah, okay. No, I totally see what you mean. The only thing I'm thinking is kind of, so one thing that I got a sense of was that even though I was living in Hungary, even though it was just as Hungarian as it could be, I still kind of felt like I was living in a bit of a glass box. You know, that it was there, but it, it couldn't quite reach me. All of, most of the people that I knew were still foreigners. I was still very foreign. With VPN, I was watching foreign TV. I was spending foreign money, this kind of thing, you know. Yeah. And that was a little bit of a disappointment, actually. And I met a lot of people, a lot of people who lived in Budapest who had a similar experience. And I guess the difference was that when I saw it as a problem, they didn't see it as a problem at all. They saw it as kind of part of the experience. They liked that. And I was just wondering what your experience with that has been so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not easy. I can attest to that. I was very lucky that you were living here, which obviously was part of the reason I moved, because there was somebody local.
And part of the reason why I moved out, of course.
Yeah, like I said, thank you for leaving me behind. Thanks for not sending the memo about, oh, guys, we're going to Spain, by the way. No. Anyway, no, that's a big part of the reason. And luckily for me, what that allowed me to do was to be introduced by a large group of people living here to start out with. And through them, I've sort of extended that network. And I went to a few of the language meetups. I always recommend language meetups as a way of meeting new people, because they'll be sort of like-minded. For instance, the German meetup had about, the first time I went, it was like 30 people. And, you know, most of them are obviously Hungarian who learned German at some point, but there were also a lot of like German expats, or there was even some Americans who were just randomly on holiday, and they're just on holiday, and they just stopped by, and they're taking German in school. I think maybe the mother was German or something. And but you make all these connections through a hobby or a passion, whether that's languages. Obviously, when people are listening or seeing this, they probably are interested in languages, so that would be an obvious candidate. But as you might remember, I was very nervous about this whole isolation thing, because I was very isolated in Denmark, which maybe makes the argument a little bit more balanced in a way, because if I was isolated in Denmark, speaking the language perfectly or good enough, let's say, then how, what are you expecting going somewhere else? You know, it's not like that will magically make it a lot better unless you work for it. And I think that's what I've been doing. So every single social event that people invited me to, I've always been going, and I've been trying to set up, you know, coffee dates every week with people I've met. And yeah, just drawing on my network, and that's been really beneficial. And so I've actually done a lot better here than I would back in Denmark. I don't know why, but yeah, that can also happen.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, I still miss you and Sam and Soli. Miss all of you. I can't believe you just left me without saying, no, I'm just kidding. You did
get it. You mean like the sun is leaving you now behind you and still coming over to me. I can see this happening as we talk.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm in a cave and you're in like the high heavens. You're like, I mean, I've never seen such contrast between two countries before that are supposedly in the same time zone, right?
Yeah, no, we're in the same time zone. Spain's not supposed to be in this time zone, though. It was moved in the 30s. It's supposed to be in the same time zone as the UK.
All right.
And it's actually a problem because it means the sun doesn't rise until 8:30 in the morning. And that's something that I hate.
Yeah.
That is something that I really can't get involved with, because I need to get up when the sun's there. And, you know, getting up at 7:00 and it's the middle of the night is not fun. So
right.
There's my gripe.
Yeah, so we've been talking a lot about languages, countries and places.
Talked at all about languages.
Languages. we should probably talk just a little bit about languages, just to say that we've done it. We've already talked about sort of the methods you use and the language learning experience if you've done. We did that back in season one. I forget the number of the episode. I should have probably looked that up, but if you go to actualfluency.com/podcast, you can see all the episodes, and Alex Rowling's name will be in close to the bottom. season one. Yeah, it's ranked by, you know, success and how many people listen and stuff. So what's changed, actually? I wanted to talk to you about that. If there's anything in recent times, let's say the last year, last 2 years, that have you had any sort of eureka moments about language learning? Has anything changed for you recently?
Well, since I left Hungary, I feel like the pressure's been off. And I think this is a big thing. In Hungary, I was constantly looking my failure in the face because I was constantly being reminded about how many things I couldn't do and still can't do if I went back to Hungary. You know, there's still horrendous vocab gaps in my Hungarian that I should fill, even though I'm pretty functional now in the language. Whereas coming to Spain, I mean, just you just cannot compare the two languages at all. I mean, I just feel like the whole world is open to me now.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But I guess what I learned from that whole experience is the way that I got things done in Hungarian was just by knuckling down and getting on with it and, you know, just aiming for a good outcome, not caring about details, not caring about, you know, necessarily having 100% grammatical correctness or even 1% grammatical correctness at some points. The point was just the transaction. The point was just getting what I needed done. And, you know, that taught me a lot. And that has really helped to push down that invisible wall you've got where you kind of feel like you've studied so much, but you can't use it, because by using it, you get better. And since I've come here, it's been very, very quick for me to warm back into Spanish.
Cool. And just speaking of your Hungarian challenge or whatever word to use,
I called it a project.
Oh, project, Hungarian project. Mm-hmm. Hungarian mission. Just kidding. So people were really, really, really impressed, and I was as well, by your end of project level. And actually, if you Google or YouTube search for Hungarian, you come up really, really near the top, which is pretty cool. But, you know, how did you make that happen? Because people are always saying Hungarian is so hard, and you know, you obviously just told us that it was difficult for you even as a very experienced language learner. But so you just knuckled down and did it? That we need more details, you know?
We need more details.
What's the secret?
It's just a couple of key concepts, I think, which will make it happen. And I think the main one is regularity.
Every day.
You know, I think every day at least something. And regular lessons, regular kind of study time. You just have to keep doing it. And even though it can feel like there's no end in sight, you are getting better. And you just kind of, you aim for those eureka moments along that journey. It's kind of like if you're doing laps of the pool, you aim for the point where you kind of get to the one end and just kind of breathe for a bit. And I had a lot of them, and it was just really basic stuff, which I kind of realized, like, wow, I can do this now. So for example, the first time I gave someone directions in Hungarian was enormous, because people would come up to me all the time and be like, excuse me, do you know where this thing is? And I didn't know where it was, but I just couldn't tell them. And it was like really frustrating because I was in my home, but I didn't feel settled. But I remember the day that I could actually give someone directions for the first time, I was kind of like, wow, there's a level of functionality that I've now got, you know. And then other things, like the first time I got in a Uber cab and spoke to the driver for 20 minutes non-stop just in Hungarian, and it was really painful. There was a lot of Google Translate going on, but we got there, and kind of I connected with this person, and I was like, okay, I've learned so much from that experience, and I now know that it's possible. So just, I was always aiming for those moments. I was aiming for those kind of very very functional breakthroughs that I was having through being in the immersion experience, and really using them as motivation to keep going and to stick to studying a little bit every day.
Right, and I think that the studying a little bit every day is also it's the biggest change I've done as well. But one thing I wanted to note about studying every day, even if it's just a little bit, that is also very difficult. I find it's challenging to do something every day. So
it is, and I think it's challenging because it requires a change of perspective for you to realize that even just looking at a piece of paper with 15 words on it is more useful than not looking at it.
Exactly.
You know, because you have this voice going saying, there's no point. There's no point unless I sit down and do an hour. And there is a point. There really is a point in just keeping your brain refreshed and staying in the habit of making it happen.
Right. Well, that's really cool. And I'm also seeing it myself, the small wins where I start to understand stuff. And, you know, when I came here the first month and I tried to order food on the phone, and I couldn't, I mean, there was a girl of about 17 or something on the phone, and she didn't understand a word of English, even though it's like pizza, menu, you know, it's not hard, but she just refused to understand, which happens sometimes. But anyway, whereas, and I, you know, if I had to go online and like the, what's the food online delivery service thing called, you know, it was only in Hungarian, and I was like, I don't understand even 1% of this website, so I can't use it even with Google Translate. You know, translating the whole thing doesn't work when you have to go past the sign up box and stuff. But yeah. Now it's like I actually can order online on a Hungarian website, and I can go down to Subway and order my sandwich, and I can ask basic questions and stuff. And every time you do it, people just light up and they're really happy, and it really helps. It makes my day as well, because it shows progress, and it, you know, it's really a big win, and collecting wins in that language like Hungarian is essential. If you just
absolutely
try to study on your own and never get anywhere, you're like, oh my God, how did I do this?
Yeah.
But I do love 100%. The language. I have to say, just on a technical point of view, it's, oh my God, what a fantastic language. I mean, who came
up with this?
It's fantastic.
Who came up with this? No, it's beautiful language, definitely. I think it's one of my favorites, and it's probably one of the things I miss most about Hungary. Was speaking this bizarre, crazy language all the time.
Yeah, it's so fantastic, and people keep saying it's difficult. I don't know. I think Russian is more difficult, but that's just a personal point of view. Obviously, I don't speak Hungarian that well yet, but it just seems that Hungarian is much more logical. It's much more regular, and if it's not regular, then it's pretty easy to be understood anyway. Whereas my Russian tutor she just completely zones out if I say one wrong ending or something. So it's I don't know if that's the truth for you as well, but I definitely don't find it impossible like some people say. Mastery though, questionable.
I think that's what I was gonna say. I think as you go further up the scale, as you get more and more advanced, you start to see where Hungarian really does get difficult, and it is more than just kind of the vocabulary and the words. It's because you're learning a non-Indo-European language. Which means that this language has a completely different way of thinking to the language that you're coming from. And certainly at the end, when I had to do things like have big arguments with my landlady about minor things and these kinds of things where you're really having to talk to people about very serious stuff and there's misunderstandings going on, that's moments where the language really does become a bit daunting, because the whole way you express yourself in Hungarian is just totally alien.
Yeah,
how it is in English. So I'm aware that the way that I sound to her is not, you know, what she would expect someone like me who's Hungarian to say, and that's where kind of the difficulties erupt. But having said that, I think, like you're saying, it is not as hard as people say to get to a point where you can be functional, get to a point where you can use the language and where you could visit Hungary and have fun speaking it with the local people.
That sounds like the ad for like the audio courses, like Pimsleur or something. It's like you get to the level where you can start speaking with the local people or something.
Yeah, but I mean, it's fun, right? I mean, I have holiday languages. I have languages I pick up a little bit just to use because it's fun,
yeah,
you know, oh my God. Let it lead wherever it leads.
Hungarian is hilarious. I mean, it really is. And the funniest thing is making up words that don't exist or using like postposition prepositions to add to words that Hungarians don't use. I was one time I said I was going home, and I said otthonról megyek, and she was like, what? Nobody ever says that. We're like, we have a word for that. I was like, okay, I didn't know. And I asked her, did you understand me? She's like, yeah, sure. So it's just a funny language in that way. I don't know if you've tried that, you know, creating words that don't exist.
Probably, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it's very forgiving, I think, which is very nice most of the time anyway. You know, they just because you use the wrong
vowel harmony or whatever, they'll still understand you. And if you use your own crazy word like I made up, you know, they understand you most of the time. I think they're more forgiving with pronunciation than other languages I've tried, particularly.
I think the response is overwhelming from local people when you learn Hungarian. People are really, really appreciative that you've done it and in awe. Like you've learned what they consider to be the hardest language in the world. I mean, everyone thinks their own language is difficult, but it's nice as a learner that people react like that. You have a couple of bad eggs, people who, the moment they hear kind of a remote accent, will just start speaking English and speak very well. But, you know, I mean, that's not something which is unique to Hungary by any means.
I think Hungary is one of the, I don't know if this is true or not, but my feeling is that most people will reply in Hungarian if you speak to them in Hungarian, even if your accent is off. I mean, I assume my accent is off, but when I go to every single shop and I say something in Hungarian, even if it's like the touristy places, they'll still instantly reply to me in Hungarian. And I usually don't understand the follow-up because it's long and fast, but they will still do it in Hungarian until I say like English. Or maybe I'm just amazing in Hungarian pronunciation. English pronunciation, not so much, but... I don't know, but I think you're definitely right. You don't get that English tax all the time, for sure. And unless you want to, of course, then you'll get it all the time, especially in the restaurants and stuff. But if you just fly under the radar, you'll be fine. So I guess we can recommend people learning this wonderful language of Hungarian.
Definitely, and visit this wonderful place. You know, I mean, two things happened when I was living in Hungary. Maybe this is just useful to end with. But two things happened which kind of still make me think about Hungary a lot. When I first moved to Hungary, I got a job at a language school, which I'm not going to name, but it was a language school in Budapest, and I didn't end up staying there very long because I didn't particularly enjoy working there. But in one of the training days, this lady came to give this training session to us, and it was the voice of the Budapest Metro in English. And I realized that about halfway through, that, hang on, I've heard this voice before. This is kind of... The doors are opening on the left. This person is standing in front of me. And then, of course, it was her. But she had lived in Budapest for 30 years. An English person, I think she's from Manchester. And she said, I moved to Budapest 30 years ago and I didn't like it. I stayed for a year. I didn't want to move there. And the whole time I thought I wanted to move to Spain. Then I moved to Spain and moved straight back, and I've been here ever since. And I was like, okay. And this voice kind of echoes around my head all the time when I'm here. I'm thinking, like, is this going to happen to me too? I don't know. The second thing that happened was kind of just before I was leaving. It was a friend's birthday, and we were in a bar. I think it was Fogyás Ház by you, actually. And his flatmate was there, and we said, and I said, okay, I'm leaving, blah, blah, blah. And he said, what do you mean you're leaving? Budapest is a city that you never leave. And I was like, okay.
Budapest so leaves we'll you.
We'll see. I don't know. Maybe there's a part of me that's still in Budapest and I'm going to go back one day, but we'll see. It's a very, very special place.
Well, you want to be, I mean, it's hard to move back when you're such a, you know, you're looking to travel and experience other cultures, isn't it? You know, thirsty for culture. It's hard to move back to where you've already been. It's kind of like going back to an ex-girlfriend, you know, you kind of know what you're getting. But
I think I'm interested in the number of people who've been like, no, you can't leave Budapest. You can leave for a bit, but you always come back. So we'll see whether the same thing happens with me.
Fantastic. And of course, we'll see you at the Polyglot Gathering, the Polyglot Workshops everywhere. You're doing everywhere. An online thing.
Yeah, we're doing an online thing now. It's going to be kind of like a month course where you get time with me and Richard in webinars, also in smaller group chats, and you also get access to an exclusive forum where we'll be on hand to help you with everything, to help you to learn languages better and to implement basically the advice that we give on the day in the workshops over the course of a month, so you can make more sustainable learning patterns.
Awesome. And that will be very helpful for people, particularly, I guess, in America or other faraway places where they can't just go to. The next one is in Valencia.
Yeah, absolutely. Valencia at the end of January.
Fantastic. And any reason you chose Valencia?
I cannot think of why we would choose it to be in Valencia.
So lazy. I've never seen anything so lazy before. You live right across the building too, right?
Well, I live very, very close, yeah.
It's crazy. Anyway, best of luck with that. That's going to be
Thank
amazing.
you.
And we'll see you in Greece as well. And obviously, I suppose you're very excited with your family connections to go to Thessaloniki. You've probably been there once or twice before, I imagine.
I've only been there once,
All
but
right.
I did enjoy it. And it's a very, very nice place to have an event like that because there's a lot of students and it's in a really good location in terms of accessibility from other countries too. So, and we've got an amazing venue with views of the sea. So,
Oh
what
my
do you
God.
want?
Incredible. Sign me up. Sign me up. I'm there. All right. Well, Alex, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. This was exactly what I was thinking when I invited you back to just catch up and see what's been going on. And I hope we provided some context to the whole expat problem, which we can call it. Also, I'd like to point people in the way of the interview with Alex. No, not Alex. What's his name? Mr. Lauder.
Anthony.
Anthony. Wow, I forgot that. Or maybe I'm just operating on very little sleep. But anyway, one of the two. Anthony Lauder's episode, also, I believe that was in season two, where we also talked about this problem because I thought I was going to go to Czech Republic. I thought I was going to go to Prague. And I asked Anthony all these questions about moving to such a different place. And he gives a lot of strategies as well. So if people are interested in becoming an expat, which is a funny word, actually, we discussed that if you're an expat, you're basically just an immigrant from a richer country, right? This is kind of funny that this distinction occurs. But anyway,
I
this is
always
the.
call myself an immigrant, just for the record.
Oh,
Let me.
you're politically correct. Are
Well, I'm an immigrant. It's as
Yeah.
simple as that. I've come to live in this country.
I do that too, actually, most of the time.
Thank you for listening to the Actual Fluency Podcast.